Welcome to Brave New Bookshelf, a podcast that explores the fascinating intersection of AI and authorship. Join hosts Steph Pajonas and Danica Favorite as they dive into thought-provoking discussions, debunk myths, and highlight the transformative role of AI in the publishing industry.
All right. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Brave New Bookshelf. I'm Steph Pajonas. I'm the COO and CTO of Future Fiction Academy. And I'm joined by my lovely co-host, as always, Danica Favorite. Danica, hi.
Hey, how are you? I'm Danica Favorite. I'm the community manager at Publish Drive, and we help make your publishing process more simple and more efficient. And one of the ways we do that is with AI. And so, since Steph and I are both with companies that have a passion for AI, as well as in our own personal lives, we love AI. So we're here to talk about that with you. Last week, if you didn't catch our last episode with Mel Amata, she was amazing. I love her tech background, and she has such a great business insight into AI and the use of AI. So if you didn't catch that, go back and listen to that.
She even name dropped NASA. That was, whoa.
Hey, right, NASA. Like, I love that. I mean, one of my favorite parts of the interview was when she was talking about how we're using AI to get people to the moon and Mars and all of that stuff. And whoa, mind blown. As we have been saying all along, we know that AI is kind of a controversial subject in the author and publishing world, but we also recognize that it is in every part of our lives. So let's figure out how to harness it for good and use it ethically and responsibly for authors in ways that are going to benefit our careers. So today, we have an amazing author with us who uses AI for her writing and has some really cool stuff. Steph, you can tell us a little bit about Rochelle, and then we'll have Rochelle introduce herself.
Oh, Rochelle's fantastic. I've met her in the past year or so since I've been in the AI space. Really love her and her books. She writes about writing with AI, and she's also put AI into some of her fiction too. So that's really cool as well. I wanted to introduce guys to Rochelle Ayala. She's here to talk with us today. How are you doing, Rochelle?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Please introduce yourself.
I'm Rochelle Ayala, and it is a pen name. And I actually do have a technical background. I was there during the days in the mainframes, and have a PhD from Cornell University in applied math, where we did parallel processing. We now know that you need parallel processing for AI. But yeah, I started writing fiction about 12 years ago, well, actually 14 years ago. But before that, I actually worked on AI with optical character recognition back in the early 90s. We were only going from 0 to 9. That was the big deal. You were trying to, yeah, it was. I worked at Nynix Science and Technology, and they wanted to automate reading checks. So when people wrote their checks, they wanted to be able to read the numbers off the checks. And I do remember all the back propagation and the feature recognition and all this matrix multiplication and going forwards and backwards, adjusting the weights. It's so amazing to me that years later, we have LLMs, which are billions of parameters, more than our little check writing thing. But I do remember we had a lady, she used to sit there, and her whole job was an image would flash on, and she was the trainer. The image would flash on the screen, and she would decide if it was a number from 0 through 9. And she'd say, oh, this looks like it could be a 7 or a 1. And then they were looking at the features, and 5s and 6s could be confused, and maybe 9s and 7s. So it was really interesting that all this is bringing back memories of those days.
Wow, that's super interesting, especially when you think about where optical character recognition comes from. And we started using that in the like 90s and into the 2000s for books. So it has evolved over time from just numbers to letters. And then now we've got LLMs on top of it, right?
Yeah, it's, to me, it's amazing, right? Just the advance in the technology and how fast it's grown. And of course, now we see it just growing exponentially to where before it was so specialized, and now this is available to anyone. And so that to me is just absolutely mind-blowing.
Well, I gave it all up to write romances about 14 years ago. I took early retirement, so I haven't been into space, right? Mm-hmm. And back about 14 years ago, because we didn't have the chips that were able to do big, massive amounts of computation, I was a little bit kind of, you know, it was still going, but it wasn't the explosion that came later with the NVIDIA GPUs.
Yeah, so, you know, we have math and computer genius to romance writer. So tell us how you got into that space of combining using AI for your writing. Like, when and how did that start happening?
Well, I just wrote regularly, you know, not by hand. Mm-hmm. I mean, I typed 10 fingers. I wrote with 10 fingers. But I think when ChatGPT first came out in November of 2020, I said, a chatbot? I got curious and interested in it, but I had a deadline in December of 2022. I wrote a novel in 14 days, and I was all proud of myself. And I wrote a little book about it. It's called I Wrote a Novel in 14 Days. That is the last novel I wrote without AI. And I'm a pantser, so that novel just, you know, I would just go, and then every time I wrote a scene, I'd think, oh, what could happen next? What could happen next? And since I already internalized the romance story structure, because you do have to have some kind of sense of a story direction. You don't want to just be meandering. That's how I'm able to pants, because I do know the romance. And I don't know any other genres but romance. So I had written a book on love stories, how to write a romance novella in 30 days. And so I do know that you have the obligatory scenes, you have to have the meet cute, you have to have the conflict, you have to have the lock in, you have to have that moment when you realize you're in love. So I know those things in the back of my head, but I never put it down in the outline. And that was the last book I finished. It was just intuitive. I always knew Elizabeth before, because in the whole indie publishing world, she was the famous Jane Austen lady. And so I had known about her, and I might have started some reading her books, but it's not really the genre that I read in, but I knew about her. And when I saw a video, I think it was an interview about Elizabeth, about AI, I quickly Googled her, got on her Gumroad class, because remember, she used to have her own Gumroad classes, and I signed up for those classes. And that's the rosebed. You know, the first class was just tell me what a rosebed is.
Classic. Yeah. And so for those who are listening who may not know who Elizabeth is Elizabeth Ann West, who is one of the co-founders of the Future Fiction Academy and really wonderful in the space. We will definitely be having Elizabeth on our podcast here at some point. Wanted to clarify that because we all know Elizabeth. We love Elizabeth.
Yeah.
We're great friends with her, but just wanted to clarify that for listeners.
So I'm somebody who came from the indie publishing world and knew about Elizabeth. And at that time in January, you get tons of emails in your inboxes from all these people saying, oh, AI can do this, AI can do that. And you're just like, oh, these are the usual suspects, because weren't they the ones selling this funnel thing or maybe even NFTs? So, but then when I saw Elizabeth, I said, oh, this is credible. I'm going to follow what she does, because I knew she was an author that had actually published books. And so I'm really glad I found her. And then I found Steph. And I also found out about Mel Amadi. And so got into my group, and now I'm here.
Nice. We're so glad that we have you. And so that leads me to our first question, which is, we've talked a little bit about it, but how are you approaching AI? Like, what is your approach to AI and the usage of AI as an author?
Well, I'm actually very flexible. For my Clifton strengths, my first number one is adaptability, and the second one is maximizer.
Oh, wow.
So I move where AI moves, right? So when I first started, the only thing that was available was ChatGPT 3.5 and PseudoWrite, where you could highlight something and then ask it to fill in descriptions or to enhance, change the mood or tone. And so I was working on a book, and I think I just immediately started. I think I was already in 9 chapters in the book, and I didn't have AI write for me, because at that point in time, it really couldn't. I would just use it to enhance some descriptions or maybe give me some ideas for mythological characters and so on. And then when Elizabeth started talking about story information, so she used to go through this whole thing about, okay, we're going to layer our prompts and we're going to ask AI to help us fill in our story blueprint. Then I started doing that way. And just today, I was looking at my Love by the Prompt book, because that was the book I put out in March 2023 using ChatGPT. It was only ChatGPT-3 at the time, and I already had story information in there, and I had gone through, first you do the premise, then you do the three-act structure and the synopsis. And the thing about AI, because it has this context window, is it'll remember a little bit of what was before. And back then, the context window was smaller. And it would give me maybe a 500 to 600 words, which would be a chapter skeleton from which you can fill in or expand on. So you never thought, oh, well, that's it. That's the chapter. And it gave interesting things. And so I was just looking at it today and I said, this stuff actually still works. But as we go on, we learn more and then we can do more. Our mega prompts got bigger. We understood more about writing sing briefs with sing beats. Remember, we're all like, oh, we got to make beefier beats. So I think my approach is I keep evolving with the AI. All books after 2023 and onwards have some AI input, but I couldn't tell you if it's this much, or if it's interleaved, or if it's just thrown out. Each chapter, in fact, could have a different method. It's a little bit weird now because Claude 3 is here. Now you have to try all three. You have to say, oh, I got to get Sonnet, Haiku. So the work has actually multiplied because it's just not ever the same. Not for me. I'm not somebody who can, you know, okay, this is how I'm going to write the book and it's a cookbook and I'm going to go back on that recipe over and over. It doesn't happen that way because AI is just changing so fast and what it can do is amazing.
I just kind of laugh about it sometimes because before, you're right, when we all started in this space, it was just ChatGPT. And now it's like, oh, but what about this model? What about this model? There's so many more choices. And it's really interesting to see how that evolves. I think you're right. Like, it's so much more work to go through and look at all the different models.
But right before the show, I said, let me just review, because I had written this book the initial outline was in that Love by the Prompt. It was called Island Heat, and it was about Maya and Luke. And I just realized that monkey mango was created by AI. It just popped up in one of the chapters. I wouldn't have even thought about it. And now Mango is like one of the most popular characters in that series because he's always so mischievous and he just is a little mischievous matchmaker, you know? And so AI will sometimes throw, and this is why I love it when it goes off the rail, because it might throw in something you never thought about. You're like, oh, this is great.
Yeah, and he becomes a fan favorite, right?
Yeah.
And then, like, everybody just wants the
mango.
Wants the mango.
Like, mango.
Yeah, I love it. That.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. I think that just the idea of Mango the monkey, AI was able to pop that in. Obviously, sometimes the ideas AI gives, you're just like, no. But I love that you got this really cool thing that you weren't expecting, because I think that's what makes it so fun, are those little experiments.
Exactly. Yeah.
That kind of leads me to my next question, because you talked a little bit about some of the evolution and how you've evolved with AI and gone with the flow. What does your workflow using AI look like? How does that play into your workflow and how do you use it?
Okay, so I'm not the person who can give you a recipe. And I think it just depends on what I'm doing in the day or what I'm thinking about, because I still do a lot of daydreaming about my books and stuff. But now I would just ask ChatGPT or ask Claude what they think about something. So maybe I'm a little bit more dependent on them. I used to have a friend that when I lived back in the Bay Area, and every Tuesday and Thursday, we'd walk around the lake 4 miles, and I would bounce off every single thing on her. She was like my ChatGPT, okay? So I would say, hey, Pat, what do you think if I did this and that? And she said, you know, and then I moved in 2020. And so in some sense, AI is taking the place of Pat. I would say, well, what do you think about if I did this or that? Of course, I know I'm talking to an LLM, but the thing about the LLM is it's not human, and it might give you something that you totally, I don't think any human might have thought about. And you've seen this even with Midjourney pictures, right? Images. oh, it put this and that together. And that's what I like about it. But ultimately, just last night, I was having a conversation with ChatGPT because I wanted to demonstrate how we layer prompts and go from a premise all the way to a chapter. And it wasn't giving me enough conflict. It just really wanted the two enemies to lovers to just work together to figure out who their common enemy is. And I kept going back. I said, no, that's not how an enemy to lovers work. She's going to have to suspect him of stealing her horse the whole time while he's saying that he's going to help her find the horse. And so I had to go back and I said, nope, that's not enough. And then even when it wrote the outline, in the middle of it, it already had the kidnapper confessing that he had not only stolen the horse, but he wanted to kill the lady. But in the next chapter, the kidnapper actually tries to kill her. And so if he already confessed, they would have nabbed him, right? So AI still doesn't have that common sense. That's why I prefer not to follow their outline. I prefer to just to get the cool ideas and the weird stuff that they might come up with and then just design the scene briefs on my own. Then I have several models write and I see if anyone gets the snarky remark I want, then I pick it out. So I always say, make the dialogue snarky. And some models are snarkier than others.
That's good to know.
I was going to say that. Claude is really funny sometimes.
Like
really funny. I've had it write some dialogue for me of like disgruntled wizards.
Yeah.
And the things it comes up with will leave me crying with laughter.
Yeah.
It's really funny.
Yeah.
And I do want to go back to what you were saying a little bit ago about how, well, I'm not here to give you any kind of formula or anything like that. And I think that's the point, and that's why we're all here is because we want to know how you do it because there's always going to be a little gem that you get from hearing somebody else or hearing parts of their process. Like when we were talking in the last episode with Mel, what I loved is she and I are both dictators. And so I was always afraid when I started using AI, I was really frustrated because I wasn't getting what I needed from it. And then I realized, well, that's because I just want to talk out the story and I want to dictate it. And so then talking to Mel in our last episode, Mel was like, yeah, I just like to dictate. Okay, yeah, that's exactly my process. And so never feel bad about not having a process that anyone duplicate or anything like that, because your process is really interesting to me. And I think our listeners are going to get a lot out of it that this is how Rochelle does it. And if they can get some really good gems or ideas from how you're doing it, I think that's really what we're hoping here. I'm glad you're sharing and I'm glad you're telling us a little bit about the different things you do. It's really interesting. When you go to write your book, how do you approach it? How do you say, okay, I'm going to write this book. I'm going to use AI. What are the pieces and the steps that you like to use? Like you were just saying, you like to bounce ideas off of it, but when it comes to the outlining, you want to do that.
AI does an outline, and I feel free to ignore it. I talked about it in that AI author's journal. I think that was the one book where I tried to force myself to go through the so-called AI writing process where you do the whole top-down waterfall. If you've done software design, in the old model was the waterfall, right? You first you do your requirements, then design, then coding and testing. But I was always one of those agile people. You just do a little of this, a little of that, and then you go back, change the design. So even in software engineering, I was an agile programmer and not a waterfall. But I try to force myself to go through the waterfall. I wrote it in the AI author's journal. And I had the outline, but then as soon as the story started, it just did not go the way the outline. And honestly, I think mine was better because AI would take the more conventional path. So what they wanted was to have this, they love to have the secret baby. You know, so if you ever say you want a second chance romance, AI will always say, oh, she had a son or a daughter and she didn't tell him about. But that was not what I wanted. That was not how the story would be more interesting because we don't need a child in between to bring them back together. So I would go through the waterfall steps, feel free to ignore the outline. And then from the very first chapter, it might deviate. Steph, you're a lot like me. I think you just start writing. And then when you get to a point, you say, I wonder what AI thinks about this. And sometimes it's not even that you need to no, it's just the same as having Pat walk with me around the lake. I wonder what Pat thinks about this. And I copy and paste. All right, what do you think? What do you think happens next? And also, I like to ask, what do you think happened in this chapter? Because sometimes if it's interpreting it not the way I thought, then maybe I'm not conveying it right. So for me, it's a very organic process. And I always leave the parameters, the temperature to 1 and the top P to 1, because I actually wanted to get more creative or to think outside of the box. So I'm a very not control type. So that's how I approach AI. And now with Rexy, it's like a power tool where now I can get 4 or 5 LOMs to tell me what they think.
I'm very similar in the fact that I'll be thinking, oh, I'm going to outline this book. I'm going to be prepared. I'm going to go in there and I'm not going to write myself into a corner. And literally like 2 chapters in, I'm way off the outline. I'm all the way out in right field. And even still, I'm definitely outlining more that I have these tools, and still I can't stick to them. So I understand completely.
And for those of you listening who are like, oh, we have all of these pantsers, I am a plotter. It's like a plotster. Like, I start kind of pantsing, but by the end of chapter 2, if I don't have an outline to work off of, I am just not a happy camper, and I cannot continue to write until that outline is done. So
See, we're all different. So
exactly. And so for those of you who are listening who are like, okay, you've had all these pantsers talking, there are plotters. It's okay. You are covered. And that's why we keep encouraging people. There really is something for everyone. And there's a little gem that everyone can get. And even as a plotter, I'm listening to Rochelle going, oh yeah, I can totally see that. I love that idea of going to the LLM and saying, hey, what do you think of this? And I think that is super cool.
I'm really excited about the really long context window ones that can actually keep the story straight. Now, a lot of them advertise, well, Steph, you already know, like they can say I have 200,000 tokens, but it's just picks and chooses because they're using RAG to fix information that stands out. And in fiction, everything's supposed to stand out. But Google's Gemini 1.5 Pro, actually, I can upload the work in progress. And I can ask it to critique it. And I even asked it, do I have enough romantic tension, and show me the scenes where you think I have enough or where I could add more. And it will actually tell me which scenes, like that time when they went to the museum and they did this and that. So this is almost like having a human critique partner, whereas I don't think Claude can do that. I'm not saying anything bad about it, but I think we've all uploaded long documents, asked it about it, and it was kind of really summarized information.
Yeah, I think that that's true. And I think that, and I'm sure Steph is going to agree with me on this, that each model has its own strengths and weaknesses. And so some of it really is learning which task you want the different models to do and why and how and all of that. And but like you, I have been super impressed with Gemini. I'm hoping maybe this weekend to get even more time to dig into it, because the more I play with it, the more it's just blowing my mind with how good it is at the tasks I want it to do. So I love that you pulled that out, because I've a couple episodes now been singing Gemini's praises.
They just released a notebook feature, which will probably be a few weeks old by the time this episode goes live. But the notebooks feature allows you to bring in your Google documents into the notebook, and then that becomes the RAG that you can search on. I tested it last night with my current work in progress. I brought it in. I asked it questions about my work in progress, and the analysis was really great. It became sort of like a story blueprint, so that you could be like, what are Garrick's eyes color? Tell me about what is happening in the first chapter of this book. It's really good at all of those things. Every single leap forward is bringing more for us to use. It's great.
Yes, I'm very excited about that. So I have not played with Notebook yet, but now that I've heard your feedback as well, I think I'm definitely prioritizing that, because I read about it and I was very excited, and I haven't had time to sit down with it yet. But I think that's my next priority, because the possibilities are amazing. Even though we're talking about Gemini and how excited we are for it, there are a lot of tools out there. So we're fangirling over it now, but I think as you are going to see,
things subject to change, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And that was a good point Mel made in our last episode, is that really pay attention to who is making those tools and who's behind them, because a lot of the things we're excited about, and even listeners who are finding this a year from now, Gemini might not even be here. I doubt it, because obviously Google's behind it, but you just don't know. And so always take that word of caution. But that brings us to our last question. And what is your favorite tool, or at least the tool du jour? What are you really loving right now?
It has to be Rexy Word Banger, because I'm a programmer. I understand everything about data stores, static variables, dynamic things. And I just love how Word Banger allows you to use your content management system to, you can store your character information, your synopsis, your motivations, your static settings, and you call that story information. At the same time, you can take the information for your sing briefs, like what you're writing on right now, and instead of copying and pasting it in these boxes, have it in the data store, and then you can programmatically pull these pieces of information out and assemble your prompt and then have it sent to the LLM and have the response come back and then stored back into your Notion. And so basically automates a lot.
I think that is a super cool feature. For those listening who don't know what Rexy Word Banger is, Steph, I know this is your wheelhouse, so could you give us just a short explanation of Rexy and what Word Banger is, how it works, all of that, so that people understand a little bit about it?
Sure, just real quickly, Rexy is a prompting tool that we developed at the Future Fiction Academy for our students. We wanted to give them the ability to prompt the AIs without having any other coding or prompting getting in the way. Some of the other tools out there, they take your prompt and then on the back end, they're doing some prompt massaging basically and like putting in different variables, and then they're sending that to the AI, and then you get back a response. So we wanted everything to be very transparent. We wanted to teach the students how to prompt properly, how to ask for things in a way that will get them good, rich answers back from the AI. And so we developed Rexy, which would give you the option to store all of your stuff in Notion, which is what Rochelle was talking about, like store all of your information and then send things to AIs and get back responses, and then store all of those responses in Notion as well. Word Banger, though, is our cool tool that we came up with that allows you to sequence prompts, allows you to prompt something, get a response, and then prompt again, and you can continue to use the response in your prompt, or you can choose to set it aside. It allows you to keep going and going and going and going so that you can move on from one prompt to the next, to be building whatever you're building. You could write a book that way, right?
And it's very flexible. You can use it as a plotter where you could just put your outline in and then just tell it go through each one of the outlines and write a sing brief. And then it'll lay it all out. You move the sing briefs into the Notion slots and then you say now go through and just take each sing brief and write a chapter. So plotters can use it. Or if you're a pantser, you could say, okay, here's the previous thing, and here's what I want to do, because you do have to put in some of your input. You have to say, I want this to happen, and oh, it'd be cool for that. And then you say, write me a sing brief, and that for a sing that continues from the sing that I just told you about, and then I told you what I think should happen. Or you can even ask it what you want it to happen. So it's not like you're tied to a specific method, because the flexibility is in the way that Word Banger allows you to put a prompt first, then the output from the previous prompt, and then the second prompt, so that you can sandwich the output from the previous prompt between your instructions, which could be pulling in things from your content management. You could have different writing style for each character, right? So you could say, oh, this scene from this point of view and his tone of voice is blah, and it will pull that in. The problem with ChatGPT or Claude is it's going to remember the other character's writing style because its content window just slides, but you have no control over what's in its content window. So let's say you wrote a scene from the female point of view and her voice is very different, and the next thing you want to write from the male point of view, But because her voice was still up in the context window, it bleeds in. What Rexy does, each time it sends an Insta, it's a fresh prompt that goes in. So even if you were filling in with story information, it's not that it remembered it from the last time you sent it. It's that you're packing it in for this prompt. And so you can very precisely control what the LLM is seeing. And that's what's really cool. And that's why it beats the long context window chat, because the long context window chat will bleed in. So you want it to know some of the story, right? You want the previous thing, but you don't want the voice. Let's say you don't want the voice of that previous character infecting the current thing you're working on. And you can do that with Rexy, but not cutting and pasting it into a chat box.
One of the nice things about Rexy is the fact that it gives the author, the creative, all the control, right? Just like she was saying, you don't have control over the context window in ChatGPT, but when you're sending a fresh prompt through Rexy to any one of these AI tools, you get the chance to say, I want this, this, and this story information to be a part of this scene. And it won't be poisoned by anything else that came before that. So that gives you the control to do the kinds of things that you want to do.
It would be cool if from one point of view, you had Claude Sonnet write it. And from another point of view, you have Mistral or something write it. That could be pretty cool. Like you do those dual first person point of views and use a different LLM for each, because they have different voices. Even if you try to tweak it.
They do. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that would be super cool. That would be amazing, actually. I want to play with that now. And one of the things I just want to say, again, this is for some of the listeners who are like, okay, so we know Steph has a really big tech background. Rochelle's got a tech background. Mel has a tech background. I do not have a tech background. And I think it's really important to know that this is also something for non-techie people. And I know some of the terms are probably confusing to people who may not necessarily be familiar with all of them or familiar with the tech stuff. Trust me, I get it. I was there. I'm still some of the terms. I'm like, okay, quick, Google, what does that mean? But also the thing I love about Future Fiction Academy is that for learning how to do all of this stuff, they have some really wonderful videos. They also have some free videos. So make sure that you are looking for that. The other thing too that is great is Steph has the AI for Authors group on Facebook, and I'm one of her moderators, and we're there to answer questions anytime. Obviously, if you're like, okay, what did they mean by this when they were talking about this in the Brave New Bookshelf, feel free to drop your questions in the comment section and we can answer it there. Or like I said, we do have our Facebook group. We have a Facebook page for Brave New Bookshelf. There are a lot of really good resources. And again, if you're not a techie person, that's okay, because I'm not. And it's really interesting and fun to learn. You don't have to be a techie person to master it. So don't feel intimidated, because it's really a lot easier than it sounds sometimes.
Right. And as writers, you're already pretty intuitive and you are very good at communicating. And so ChatGPT and Claude, they were designed to be conversational. So don't be shy with them. Just talk to them and converse with them, and you will be able to influence how they're going to give results to you, because they're actually programmed to want to please you and to give you what you want. Well, to a limit, because they don't, the not safe for work stuff. But you don't have to have a tech background. And in fact, sometimes having the verbal abilities to tease out the stuff from the LLM is important too, because sometimes I say, I'm sorry, I can't do this. A tech person may just say, well, why can't you do this, and try to change their prompt. But a more intuitive person might just say, well, what if we are writing fiction and I have a problem that I want to explore this area, and it'll just, okay, sure, fine, we'll discuss this.
Yeah, it can be convinced sometimes be. to help us, even if it doesn't want to in the very beginning.
I'm surprised that my book, Love by the Prompt, that's over a year old, is still selling, because it does not require a tech background. It's just ChatGPT, and it's just, here's the premise, here we're putting in the story information, we're asking it to write a scene. And once people dip their toes in there and they figure out, hey, I can do this too. I'm not saying Rexy is easy, but the people in the Future Fiction Academy, everyone jumps in to help. Steph, Elizabeth, and Stacy, and everybody, of course, they help. But other members also jump in to help too.
Yeah, it's a great community. We're really blessed to have everybody in there helping at pretty much all times.
Yeah, I think it's really great. I think that there is a great community of supportive authors who want to help with AI. So like I said, they've got the Future Fiction Academy. We have our AI for Authors group. And really feel free to reach out, because the thing that I have found is that the people willing to help, if you just ask, it's actually sometimes I feel like you get more help than you can even handle, because people are really generous with their time. So I love that about the community. And I really hope that people listening are encouraged by that and can find some comfort in that community as well.
Yeah, AI Writing for Authors on Facebook is definitely very helpful to people. They can come and ask questions. Rochelle has been in there for a long time as well. We need to remember that the community here can support each other, especially when you're learning and you're trying to figure things out. So that's why I'm really glad that we're able to do this here too with the podcast.
Yeah, me too. Like this, I think this is really going to be something very helpful to people. And that is always our goal, is to be helpful and educational and see where we can guide people. So before we close out for today, Rochelle, do you have any final thoughts or anything else you wanted to share about AI and publishing, or something we haven't asked you or touched on that you would like for people to know?
I think one of the things everybody's going to see from this podcast is there's no right way to use AI, and that everybody can use it to their comfort level. And I know there are people who have different opinions about how AI should be used, but I think any use that's ethical is fine. Some people are not comfortable in certain areas, and that's okay too. And I think by having this podcast, we could show people all the possibilities of how AI can assist you. But at the same time, you do realize that you're the ones putting in the prompt, right? And so that's coming out of you. And so you're using AI rightly, or you're doing something sketchy by putting something in the prompt that you shouldn't. It really is on the human to decide how they're going to use AI. And then the other part that I was more thinking about just lately is how much your prompts affect the output. So I used to think, oh, like even in my Love by the Prompt, I gave a whole list of prompts. I put them out on a website so people can copy and paste them. But now lately I thought, wait, you know, some people say, oh, AI is not creative. I asked it for a high school reunion romance and it came back with a secret baby. Well, that's because you're asking the same prompt that everybody else is asking. So it's good to look at other people's prompts as a guideline. But I think the more you put of yourself into the prompt, then you're going to get something different and unique, and that comes from you. So that's just a thought I've lately been having.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm like, yep, that is so true. You have to take that prompt and put your spin on it to get something that is more you. So, Rochelle, how can people find you online if they want to follow you or find your Love by the Prompt book or any of your other books? What's the best way for them to find you online?
I have a website that's not that well maintained. It's Rachelle, RachelleAyala.net. And if you go /books, I'll have a whole list of my almost 100 books. You could just look up my Amazon authors page, I guess. That's probably the best place to find me, because I'm not very good at email marketing or funneling or any of those things. I just like to write and I like to help people. So look me up on Amazon, or if you have Facebook, then AI Writing for Authors group, I'm in there. Or FFA, just send me on Discord.
Excellent. Thank you so much for coming today. It was so fun to talk about all these things because we're all creatives and it's really, really cool to see what other creatives are doing with AI.
Well, thank you so much for having me. And I totally enjoy FFA and the Facebook group that you put together, Steph. Thank you so much. And thank you, Danica, for all of what you do for publishing.
Yeah, you're welcome. This is a passion project for both of us and something that we really want to be out there to support authors. And like you said, not every piece of AI is for everyone, and that's okay. We're just here to share information so that people can make educated choices about what might work for them, how they might use it. And if there's something that's not for them, if you're listening to this and you're like, yeah, no, I don't want to do that, That's okay. You don't have to. But maybe the next episode, you're going to get a little gem where you're like, oh my goodness, I really want to do that. And we want to support you as much as we can throughout that whole journey.
Totally agree. Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming, Rochelle. We really appreciate you spending some time with us here today. So that's it for today's episode of Brave New Bookshelf. So on behalf of Danica and me and Rochelle, we're going to wave bye and we'll see you guys all next time. Thanks for coming.
Okay,
thank you. All right, thank you.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us on the Brave New Bookshelf. Be sure to like and subscribe to us on YouTube and your favorite podcast app. You can also visit us at bravenewbookshelf.com, sign up for our newsletter, and get all the show notes.